So before we get this week started, a couple of notes we want to take care of. Remind everybody that on the Saturday night before the Saints-Vikings game in London, the Dome Patrol podcast is partnering with New Orleans Dad Football to throw the greatest Saints party that London has ever seen. It's going to be at the Ninth Ward Pub in London. It is free to attend. All you got to do is buy your own drinks and be old enough to drink, I suppose, but that's really on the Ninth Ward. We're all going to be there from the Dome Patrol podcast. Except for Scott. So will Nick Underhill from New Orleans Dot Football. Ross Jackson is going to be there. And I think there's a couple of other people that we're waiting for confirmation. So we're not going to say any names as far as who else is going to be there. We've heard from several listeners in the UK and in the US who have said that they're all going to show up. So this is going to be a night.
Jeff, you're going to be there?
I'm going to be there. This is going to be a night to remember that none of us will remember. So the key, though, is to not get too drunk to where you don't wake up early enough on Sunday morning to attend the ultimate tailgate experience. We're also going to be doing that. And what's the deal with the ultimate tailgate experience? Well, it is across the street from Tottenham Stadium. It is the closest
Tottenham.
Say it, Ben. You're laughing at me. How do you say it?
Yeah, Ben, say it.
It's the Armitage Shanks Arena.
Doesn't roll off the tongue quite as much like
off the street across the street from the Lamb Shanks Arena, and it's the closest that you can get to the stadium in order to drink and tailgate. There are tickets for this one, and if you go to the ultimatetailgateparty.net/UK, you click on Tottenham Tailgates and use promo code DOMEP25, and you're going to get a £25 discount on your tickets. That ticket is going to get you unlimited beer, wine, tailgate food. They will have a merch store that you can buy merch. We don't know what kind of merch is going to be there yet, but
I believe a DJ.
There's music. They're going to have TVs that are going to be shown. This tailgate is literally the ultimate tailgate experience, especially for Saints fans who are coming across the pond. This is the best way that you can be sure that you're going to be with Saints fans tailgating in a good atmosphere where everything that you need is taken care of. There's bathrooms at this tailgate, am I right?
I would assume so.
Okay, well then I've got everything I need then. Beer and bathrooms.
It looks like there's a rooftop bar.
It is a rooftop bar.
It's a rooftop too. Nice. So I can pee on the rooftop. Yeah. You can pee onto the Vikings fans, all three of them.
Well, the Vikings fans, in conjunction with the actual Vikings team and front office, they're doing some kind of organized march to the stadium.
Hang on. People are willing to march down Seven Sisters Road in Tottenham.
Apparently so.
Willing to do that. I'd rather walk down the streets of Baghdad.
Oh, wow. So there you go. So this sounds like it's going to be in a great neighborhood, which means it's even better to get your ticket to the gated rooftop safe place, the tailgate.
With armed guards.
Right. So that website, again, is theultimatetailgateparty.net/UK. Use the promo code DOMEP25. You get your £25 discount. We're all going to be there as well. So Saturday night, party with New Orleans Dot Football at the Ninth Ward. Sunday morning, tailgate with the Ultimate Tailgate Party. Go to the game and let's beat the Vikings. So let's get the show started. What's up, Houdat Nation, and thanks for joining us on the Dome Patrol podcast. I'm your host, Jeff, and in this episode, we're going to talk about, everything, because this is our season premier annual tailgate party that the Dome Patrol podcast gets together and we tailgate for the upcoming football season. We're going to cover everything from, let's see, our certain takes on topics that are affecting the Who Dat Nation. We'll get our last looks in on positions that we've been watching all preseason. We're going to talk about final cuts. We're going to review the 2022 schedule, make our record predictions, which is an annual tradition. We'll briefly zoom in on the NFC South. We're going to have a few look at them tweets to look at. And we've got week one of pick'ems starting as well. Jason, you ready for that?
Are you ready for this?
Okay, here we go. And of course, everyone's favorite season premiere tradition, bold predictions, sure to go wrong, which is where everybody in the Dome Patrol podcast makes predictions for this season that are so bold that there's no fucking way that they are right. So another thing that we used to do before we kind of stopped doing it this off season is we used to start every show talking about our drunk scale numbers on a scale from 1 to 10. We would introduce everybody and ask them on a scale from 1 to 10, how drunk are you? Because we're recording this on a Saturday, this is a tailgate, this is the season premiere, we're bringing that back because some people have started drinking already. We're just going to kind of give you all an idea for how off the rails this episode might go based on what everybody's drunk scale numbers are. So put your seatbelts on, keep your hands and legs inside your earbuds at all times, and try to enjoy the show. Let's start with Jason. Welcome to the show. What's your number?
When you say some people have started drinking, do you mean all people? Because I'm going to go ahead and say it's probably all people.
I don't know, Ben, have you started drinking?
No, I'm sober tonight because I've got to try.
Ben's breastfeeding, so he can't drink.
Yeah, no.
What do you have, a time trial tomorrow?
I am doing a triathlon tomorrow, yeah. Oh. So I got that in literally about 8.5 hours time I start, so yeah.
Oh, sweet. All right, so that's a zero for Ben.
We and in about 15 and a half hours, he finishes.
That's better than I would do. What are you drinking then? What's that red? Is that steroids?
It's literally just apple and blackcurrant squash.
Okay.
Creatine. Is there creatine in there?
All right, Jason, what's your number?
I'll go with 4.5.
All right, what are you drinking?
I am drinking bourbon. It is the first Saturday of college football. It's the kickoff show. It's seemed like a bourbon kind of day. So
actually, last week was the first weekend of college football, if you count the
It's week
Hawaii
zero.
Game.
It doesn't really count.
Right. All right. James, welcome to the show. What's your number?
I am probably 5. I started drinking at about 2:30 this afternoon. I've been watching the Taylor Hawkins tribute concert at Wembley Stadium. So decided to have a few beers with that. And like Jason, once I finish this beer, going on to the bourbon.
All right. We're bourbon buddies. I like it.
Shouldn't your number be a lot higher? Because Taylor Hawkins' number was.
Well, I expect them to be high. Do you have a decimal? Are you
no,
a
5.420? I there are no decimals involved. No.
Okay. All right. Scott, welcome to the show. What's your number?
I actually have not started drinking yet. So
Scott and Ben, same category. Got it. Wesley, what's your number?
What a pathetic loser.
I'm probably about a 4 right now.
A 4? What are you drinking?
Look at that.
I started off with a few Trulies. I'm doing vodka now. Nice cold vodka with a little bit of some lemony lime sparkling mineral water with it.
Squirts?
No squirts.
You sure? Is it Crystal Light? There's zero calories.
It is zero calories, but it's not squirt.
A man after my own heart. Vodka and squirts and Trulies. That's my go-to. Although I'm drinking Moscow Mules today.
What is your number?
What you mean a Moscow donkey?
I think my number is probably a 1A.
Shouldn't it be a Ukrainian donkey?
It's Ukrainian, isn't it?
I don't care anymore.
They're still dying.
Like everyone else in the world, I cared for a week or two, and then I moved on.
No, you should, because everything in England is costing a lot more because of this.
I know, because I've been paying for this upcoming trip, and all of the prices that I'm paying, I see the effects. So I'm drinking a Moscow Mule because it pays to be rich in Russia. It
feels like pounds in your pocket. Just the weight just comes down on you, right?
Yeah, that's okay. All right, yeah, I'm probably a 1A, so... We'll see how far that goes. I am post-surgery 4 days ago, so I did take a painkiller, and I'm drinking, so we'll see what happens with all of that.
He had the classic Saints preseason surgery.
That's right. Don't make me laugh hard. It hurts. let's jump into our first kind of category of topics or conversation, which we're going to call this "What's Your Take?" And I'm going to present to you a thing that is something that the Hudat Nation has been talking about over the last couple of months or might be concerned about over the next couple of months. And I want to hear kind of what everybody's take on this is. So the first
take your base.
Take your first take is
sorry, I need to make you laugh, but
the wide receivers' impact on offensive game plans. So as we enter the season, this is the first year that we are entering in a while that we don't have a legitimate concern at the wide receiver position.
Ben, one of us didn't have a concern last year,
right? and so I want to know, what's your take on that, the impact that that's going to have on our offensive game plans? Are we going to see a retread, or are we going to see anything different? Jason, why don't we start with you?
Well, I'll actually make it easy for you guys, because this this topic plays into two of my bold predictions sure to go wrong. So I'm just going to, I'll save myself for that, and I'll let you guys talk.
The bold predictions?
It's going to be positive, Jeff.
Okay, so it's a positive impact on offensive game plans. Got it.
That is my expert opinion.
All right. So, Ben, last year you said that there was no problem with our wide receiver room. Actually, Ben was the Ben was the one calling out the wide receiver room from day one last year, to which everybody told him he was crazy, that Callaway is the second coming of Marcus Colston, because they share the same name. So, Ben, what is your take on the impact that wide receiver room this year is going to have on our offensive game plan?
I don't think I've seen a position group turn around like this within a 12-month period, like ever. Like, we've gone from the worst wide receiver group in the league, obviously with the Michael Thomas injury, to now, I think, with if Thomas is healthy, the best wide receiver group in the league. And it's just, yeah, it's just a remarkable turnaround. I'm glad they, you know, it shows there is a bit of responsibility, accountability. It would be very easy just to say, oh, we'll take Olave and we won't worry with Jarvis. But no, they went the extra mile. What's good to see. And like I said, with Winston as well, having the deep pass this year that we haven't had for a couple of years with Breeze, I think just opens up the offense completely.
Lack of Peyton as well, though, because I don't think we'd have signed those wide receivers and made the move we made to get Olave if Peyton was still coaching.
Yeah.
Peyton or thought Landry. The room was good.
Or Landry, because Peyton certainly does not like LSU players.
As well.
Or local guys. Yeah. Anybody else? Like, once the first person goes, you can all kind of jump.
So I think the other thing that our new wide receiver group does to our offense is it's going to, I think, make Alvin Kamara a bigger, more dangerous part of the offense. You've got to watch out. Last year, everybody on the defense could watch what was Kamara doing and just try to stop him. That was the entire game plan that they had to come out with.
Weren't they putting like eight in the box?
It was over and over again. And so you now are opening up screen passes, but also the running game. Now, again, some of this, our offensive line has to block for him to run, but it's going to really open up a lot for Alvin Kamara. And I think he's going to have the best season that he's ever had as a pro. I don't think it's going to be close. I think he's going to set he might make a run at Darren Sproles all-time yardage record.
I just fell out of my chair.
Sorry.
I own Kamara in pretty much every fantasy league that I'm in. So
I think that he's going to have what we're seeing from him. He looks like he's in the best shape of his life and in the best balance and the strongest that he's ever been. And if he stays healthy, it's going to be a huge impact on the amount of yards that he's going to put up this year.
Spoiler alert, whoever's picking number two in our fantasy draft, you're already on the clock.
Wow. Just like that.
As much as I hate to agree with Wesley, and I do hate it, trust me, I really do see Kamara being a problem for a lot of people this year. Having the wide receivers that we're going to have just opens up the offense totally, kind of like you said. I mean, you got to figure, if you've got three wide receivers, Olave, Thomas, and Jarvis Landry lined up, and you're in the shotgun, and you've got Kamara next to you, and he runs a screen pass, who's going to cover him? Or not even a screen pass, just – runs out and runs a slant or goes across the field, like, you're gonna have a linebacker on him, and there's no linebacker that's gonna be able to cover him. It's gonna open up the offense totally. The offensive line, hopefully it'll help them as well, because if our wide receivers are getting open like they should, they're not gonna have to block for as long. It's gonna be on Jameis, and I have confidence in him that he'll be able to read and may hit the open receiver and make the plays. So
I think it'll affect Kamara's ability less on the screen pass, only because a screen pass, you know, when it's a screen pass and the receivers have to block, and it's kind of a different thing. But as far as Kamara getting open, yes, kind of like if he takes a few steps, becomes kind of a hot route guy or a slant, that yes, a linebacker has to cover him. I think, yeah, like the receivers themselves, each of those guys are going to command either a one-on-one, a cornerback or a safety. You're going to have to account for that. You're going to put your number one cornerback on Thomas, your number two guy. And I mean, to me, Olave may display number one talent, you know, Landry could display number one talent. So your second and maybe even third secondary man, you don't have enough guys unless you pull a safety up or something to cover all of the receivers. And then don't
forget, no one's going to be double teamed. No one can be double teamed, right? Exactly.
Yeah. So if you throw out four receivers on a play, you know, even without Kamara, right? So put Deontay in there or somebody, like whoever our number four guy is. Somebody's open.
I think you're missing another playmaker on this offense that no one's really talking about. But
Taysom
as well. He's shown flashes at tight end. I still think you're going to see him running the ball as well. I think Taysom's going to be down as a tight end, but he's going to be a Swiss Army knife.
Well, he's going to be an H receiver, right?
It's going to be a Swiss Army knife again. You'll see him popping up everywhere.
So apart from the teams,
I don't even care about him being a Swiss Army knife. Put him as an H receiver. Let him be Rob Gronkowski. Yeah. Dude, Rob Gronkowski's entire career, he didn't go everywhere. He wasn't a Swiss Army knife, but he catches fucking touchdowns in the end zone.
As long as he doesn't line up at quarterback, I'm fine.
Right, the teams we're going to play against, right? They're going to play three cornerbacks. They're going to have two outside cornerbacks and a slot. So those are the three people that are going to be covering Thomas, Olave, and Landry. So that means that Kamara is on, more than likely, a linebacker.
At best.
It's a mismatch.
Or you pull a safety up for him or something. I think
Wesley, you said this a couple of weeks ago. You know, when Michael Thomas last played, he was being double covered every week and still broke the NFL record for receptions in a season, being double covered every week. There's going to come a time where a team, when we're playing against, they're going to have to double cover somebody because somebody's going to be open every single play.
It's going to be... Let's just have this O-line holds up. I've got faith in
that. So, Ben, I'm glad you said that, because that's a natural segue into take number two, which is, are you concerned about our offensive line health and depth at this point? Because we had our left tackle situation. Hurst was injured. Looked like Penning was going to end up getting the start. Penning gets put on pretty much IR. He's out probably for the year. But Hurst is coming back now for week one. Are there any concerns about our overall offensive line? And is that going to ruin the Saints' plans for this year? Or are you saying, Jeff, you're overreacting?
I think that you always worry about the health of an offensive line, right? I mean, always.
Especially in New Orleans.
And you always worry about the depth on the offensive line, too. But if they can game plan right, even if with the talent we have, even if we have a bad offensive line, I think we can win. I take Cincinnati as an example. Last year, they had a horrible offensive line, good wide receivers, or great wide receivers, great quarterback, good running back, and they went to the Super Bowl. I mean, it could be the same kind of thing. Now, Joe Burrow got killed a lot. We don't want that to happen to Winston, but I mean, you can do it with a mixed match offensive line.
Wesley, I think you had a comment about Hurst and his ability to play, and Ruiz and his, let's say, improvement in the last preseason or the couple preseason games. Maybe is it Doug Marrone's impact that actually Cesar Ruiz is not as big a concern? Is Andres Pete a concern? Maybe that's where I'm getting my nervousness from, is kind of like, I feel like we have an offensive line that is already suspect.
Yeah, I think there's a way to be, we can all be a typical fan and be like, well, we don't like Andres Pete because sometimes he, you know, falls back on his back. And we can say, well, I don't like Ruiz because he's absolutely never done anything that seems to, you know, be impactful except for get quarterbacks hurt. And then James Hurst, well, he was supposed to be replaced this year. He's not even supposed to be the starter. I think we've seen him. I've always said that if Andres Pete is the worst player on your offensive line, that's a damn good offensive line. And people being hating on him has been being way too picky and spoiled for a long time. because Andrus Peat, especially against the run, is a damn good offensive lineman. And most of the time against the pass, he's a better than average offensive lineman. We're seeing Ruiz. Ruiz was a first-round draft pick who hasn't lived up to that, and we've had lots of excuses as to why, whether it's changing position or never having a real offseason. Those excuses are gone, and we've heard him mentioned multiple times by Saints players as being the MVP and the most improved and all the stuff he's doing, and he's looked good in the games. I get it, the stuff that people are saying about Hurst, but remember, the Saints told us when they drafted Penning, even though it was a first round, that they didn't call him a project because he's better than a project, but that he's going to have to come in and take this job from James Hurst. And most of the educated media around the Saints said that even if Trevor Penning's been over the last two or three weeks, like gaining lots of momentum and learning a lot, but he wasn't going to take the job from James Hurst by week one. He was going to take the job from James Hurst probably by week four or five or six, something like that. So we're kind of back to where, like, hopefully Ruiz has improved, Peat has improved, and James Hurst is still our starting left tackle like he was going to be all along. So, I mean, there's ways to try to be negative about it, but I don't see it. I mean, now, health is important. We need these guys to stay healthy. I don't need a Lewis Kidd replacing James Hurst in the middle of the game ever. Lewis Kidd admits he's got a lot to learn.
So, and Throckmorton is not starting, but he is there to sub in when needed, right? And Throckmorton, I think there was a point in the offseason that we thought Throckmorton might actually start on this offensive line at some point until, mm-hmm, I guess we saw Trevor Penning.
Back to the Andrus Peat bit where everyone's, you know, he gets a lot of crap, Peat does. But if you said you drafted a first round left guard in 2015 and he's going to make three Pro Bowls, you'd be well happy with that return, and he's still on the team. You'd be well happy with the return.
Well, it's the only time you notice an offensive lineman is when they do something wrong.
It's the same that we talked about with Lattimore. It's like these things come out and say Lattimore is the second or third best cornerback in football, and Saints fans go, "What do you mean? He makes, you know, three bad plays a season." And it's like, well, you see that because you watch every single play. So we can really nitpick the best plays and the worst plays that every person on the Saints makes. And it's easy to dislike somebody like that, but I'll stand by it. If Andrus Peat is the worst player on your offensive line, it's a damn good offensive line.
Yep. Yeah. I'll take that every day of the week.
All right, so then maybe not as much concern. And then, yeah, my follow-up to that was going to be, how is Doug Marrone's presence impacting the offense as a whole? Yeah, the offensive line, but, like, I think everyone would agree that Doug Marrone is probably one of the best non-player additions to the team this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Marrone has the skins on the wall to come in and tell anybody anything and teach and develop offensive linemen. I think that, also, we're talking about, this is Zach Strief's first real year, kind of helping. I mean, Zach Strief is more responsible for everybody.
He
went really quickly from retiring to becoming an announcer to coming back and like, oh, I'll work with the Saints. I'm sure last year he didn't know what he was doing, besides just kind of the same way that he, you know, coached up young players when he was a player.
I mean,
and then I don't want to discount that Jari Evans spent a ton of time with the Saints this offseason.
Yeah.
And I mean, we're going to talk about, you know, offensive line development and all. Jari Evans is one of the best guards in the history of football. And that's not something to say just as a Saints fan, because we watched him. He is one of the best offensive guards in the history of this game.
Can we do what we did then with Jari Evans? Is that writing on the wall where Strief and Evans are going to be offensive coaches, O-line coaches with Marrone? Imagine Marrone, Strief, Evans. Fucking call Bushrod up too. Get him in the facility. Dude, that's a setup to where even after, let Marrone even teach them to be coaches. And when Marrone inevitably moves on, if you can keep those two or three guys in the building.
We might hit the lottery with Marrone. This is one bad thing about hiring young, talented coaches. They're going somewhere. Doug Marrone may not want to go be a head coach again. He's been through all that. He's worked all those ton of hours. And
I mean, not going to get that job either.
Been blamed for it. Yeah, plus, I mean, he would have to be incredible at this job. And, like, he's not going to probably get that. But he probably doesn't want to leave. Like, he might be like, hey, I'll do this for the next 5 years.
Like Carmichael.
He's just at that age. Like, so we might get lucky with Marone where he can actually build something here and, like you said, truly develop the next offensive coach, right? Offensive line coach.
Do your thing great. Yeah. Okay. All right. Next take that I'd like to know about. And Scott, we'll start with you this time. Losing Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, big topic of the week. What's your take on losing CJGJ to the Eagles?
I know he was a fan favorite. He was a fan favorite of mine just because of how much shit he talked. But overall, I think we'll be fine.
We're going to miss the personality more than we miss the play on the field. It's exactly what it is. Yeah, it's a shame it ended the way it did.
Jason, you give the procedure. I'm kind of in the same note as them, sort of. So you give your. I know you have.
Like I understand the trade because if it comes down to him or McCoy, to me it's fucking McCoy. So like I get it, but our team is worse without him. 100%. Our team is going to be worse without him, and I don't mind getting rid of him.
Talent, or. The psychological. No, both.
Like he was a really, really good player, and I understand like slot corners kind of max out at a number, safeties max out at another number. He wants more money, obviously, so he wanted to transition to safety. So
it's Jimmy like, let's Graham say, all over again.
It's and look, he's I understand it from his perspective. Make as much money as you can, but and I'm okay with understanding that eventually we're not going to sign him. Eventually we won't. And I get it. I'd rather re-sign McCoy than re-sign Sidney or CD, whatever you want to call him. But
Sidney?
Definitely not Sidney.
Well, to all Saints fans, he's probably Sidney now. Everybody's like, yeah, fuck him. He's not.
Maybe he's a five.
But, oh, we'll definitely have to do a checkpoint later. But I just, with what you're going to get in return from him, with what we got, I understand maybe the situation was it was so toxic. We clearly wanted him out of the building. That's the one thing. We clearly did not want him here anymore, but to not get more. And then that's the thing. Like, I just figured if we're only going to get a fifth and a sixth, like, yes, he's going to be an asshole, but as much as an asshole he may be, it's still a contract year. He wants to max out. His production on the field is going to be the best it can be. And I just feel like everybody's talking about our culture. We can handle anything. We should have been able to handle it. Now, who's if you're going to trade him, you just have to get more than what we got for him. So
is that going on in New Orleans? Because I'm not hearing our culture.
So I think our culture should be, we're not going to put up with that. Not that we can change now here. And Jason, I'll agree with you. So one, I'd said, I thought that when we figured out that he was asking for, it sounds like he's asking for $12 million a year.
Yeah, he asked for $12 million.
And we were at $8 million a year. That's an enormous difference.
And I'm okay with not paying him 12. I'm okay with that.
Best case scenario is we just go, man, play great this year. Somebody might give you 12. We'd want you to be here, but like we're at an impasse, but you've got one more year left in this contract. And he goes, cool, I'm going to play and I'm going to still be a dickhead to the other team, but I'm going to show. That's the best case scenario. And I agree with you. This isn't like basketball or baseball where, oh, letting somebody walk away for nothing. It matters. It's especially when it's a fifth or sixth round. Football is a very different sport as far as that. So I'm okay with best case scenario was him playing his best he could for us and then leaving. He decided that wasn't the option by some of the scenes he started showing.
0% chance of that, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he made that an impossibility by yelling at trainers, yelling at the team, not listening to coaches. But I agree with you, Jason. That was what we needed to have happen. I'm not sure if I agree. So kind of both sides. I'm not sure if the team overall, the defense got worse. I think Jason probably knows as good as anybody being a season ticket holder. The dome is different between plays when CJGJ and Quan Alexander were on the field. Now, there's crazy things that the two of them would do that were off script and might both be on the wrong side of the field from where the tackle needed to be happening. But between plays, they kept the team engaged and kept energy up, and that was always great. Bradley Roby is going to – or. I mean, whoever's there is going to probably play more traditional. They're going to be where they're supposed to be at all times. I know that on this podcast, I've said a couple times, I thought it was great last year having CD as the one kind of off script crazy person that you couldn't keep track of. As soon as we signed Tyrann Mathieu, I brought up, it scares me to have two of them. Because if two of them go off script and go the wrong way, two people makes a big hole now. And so I'll say that I've been worried about that. Now, to be fair, when Nick Underhill was on with us, he told us he didn't think that would be necessarily such a big issue, but he understood. He wasn't like scared of it. it still scared me all the way through. Having those two guys as your, they can both like, oh, I'm going to surprise everybody and I'm going to go over here. And then they're just not where the play is supposed to be. So I'm not terribly scared of it. I thought we were going to trade him. I didn't think we were going to trade him for a fifth and a sixth. But what the hell do I know about trade values unhappy players 1 week before the season starts? I don't know.
And that's the other thing, too. It's like, yes, we're all fans. We all think we know on paper. This is what it looks like. None of us are NFL GMs. None of us are involved in everything in the building. Clearly, they could not have him around anymore. And if that's the case, then I understand it. I don't have to like it. Like, I definitely think we're worse in the short term. But if that's what had to we're not around. We don't see everything. So we have no idea to be like, oh yeah, on paper, this is a shitty trade. And sure enough, it looks like a shitty trade, but none of us on the podcast, anybody on Twitter, nobody's a fucking NFL GM. Like, we have no idea what goes into everything. So I understand that too. It's just like kind of James said, it's like, I understand it, but it kind of sucks. And we're going to be a little worse. It's going to be a little less fun to not have him on our team.
Ben might have an idea.
Going back to the culture idea, the culture and locker room, I think culture is a massive thing in all sports, not just the NFL. I think James has seen that in his football team over here. We've seen it with the Pelicans.
Soccer.
Yeah. Okay, we've got soccer. You're coming over here. You have to call it the right thing when you come over here.
Oh, Kevin Durant, I'm keeping Brandon.
Well, I will between September 22nd and October 3rd.
Culture is massive. And if there is a chance the culture is going to get harmed, then yeah, it's definitely time to move on and not risk that for a year of production. Like everyone else has said here, I think that the value of the trade was pretty shit, to be fair. I think every fan was a bit like, oh, well, hopefully we get decent value back from it. I think maybe a third or something. And then that came out, we're just like, oh. Like it gets me worried. Like, what is this front office going to trade Peyton the rights of Peyton for?
Oh, I mean, it's we're definitely going to get one or two first round picks.
As you thought, we're going to get a third for CD.
Well, so yeah, I don't buy the Saints' excuse of, oh, we felt like we're so far apart that we wanted to get our value for him now. No, that's not true, because you didn't get your value for him now. You sent a message to him, which was, go fuck yourself. We're going to take nothing for you, and that's fine. The other thing is, if the rumors are true about how he's been acting in practice, then he would have been a negative impact this year. Which means, I think, Jason, one of your earlier points is right. Like, our team is going to be worse this year. The reason I disagree with that is we are going to be better, because he was already showing that we weren't going to have the CD Deuce of last year or the year before. Yep. We were going to have a problem guy. So we actually got better by giving him away for nothing because of the way he was acting. And yeah, like, he's a fan favorite. Wesley, your points about how he acted in between plays in the dome. You know what? We won before him. We actually won a Super Bowl without him.
Long time ago.
Hold on. You may not want to drag the Super Bowl into this.
My point is, he is not the key to this season. He is not the key to this team. Everything that we've done this year, everything that we've talked about being hype and excited about this year, it was this, and this. Oh, and we got CeeDee Deuce. Okay, well, you know, now we don't have him. That doesn't mean that Tyrann Mathieu isn't going to still be lights out. That doesn't mean that everybody on the defense isn't going to be.
Does it mean that Marcus May is going to wave a gun?
But the other big part, like Ben and James both said, none of us are GMs. We don't know what we're talking about. And to us, maybe a month ago, if we would have come out and said, hey, we've got too many people in our backfield and we love Justin Evans, we need to get rid of somebody and we can't afford CeeDee Deuce, who's an amazing player and we love him and wish he could stay, maybe we get a third or a fourth for him.
I'm glad he's gone.
But when it comes down to the attitude,
I'm glad he's gone.
When it comes, and we never really talked about it here, because when we drafted him, nobody cared, but you can go and Google him and problems at Florida. He's caused significant problems in the team and in the community, where, like, there was a reason. The talent wasn't the reason he wasn't drafted. The talent isn't the reason he's still not here. He's not here in this team. So it's I don't know, but we don't know what these people are. I'm pretty sure most of us probably thought, it sucked when we cut Kirk Merritt, because for sure he was getting picked up. There's no way he'd make it to our practice squad. And well, he's on our fucking practice squad. So, like, I mean, we're always wrong about those. And so
I just say, like, he's the way that he's been acting. I said it weeks ago that be careful, you know, the whole you play with fire, you're going to get burned. Be careful what you have, because this is the kind of player who it's great when it's directed at somebody else. But the moment he's not happy, he's going to turn it around and start poisoning from within.
I'll give him credit.
Shit out of our locker room.
Give him credit after
how good he is. It ain't worth it.
Since he got traded, he's been super gracious about the fans and the love of New Orleans. And
his PR team wrote one letter for him. But other than that, he's going full Junior Gillette. Trust
it's
me.
More than Anthony Davis.
He started off. He started off. And then I'm just telling you, right? But here's what I think. Philadelphia is going to eat him alive. The fans in the city,
they're going to love him in year one.
That's the wrong place for him to go with his attitude, because the love that he's gotten from New Orleans fans, he's not going to get there. And when we got a penalty, we're like, okay, you were tough. That was cool. Like, way to, you know, get in Tom Brady's face. Over there, going to be like, you're an idiot. Why are you acting like this? Why did you get that penalty? You caused
us to lose. Because it's a fan base full of him. Like, they're all the same. Something about getting cut. I read this on Twitter the other day. Something about getting
cut. Oh, God.
It's in people's
heads. Well, it must be true.
It's in players' heads. It's funny. Like, the Saints are going to live rent-free in CJGJ's heads for the next several year, to the point where he's going to be just like Junior Gillette was. 5 years from now, CJGJ is still going to be talking about getting cut from the Saints. I guarantee you.
And we do play them later this year as well.
That
game is going to be for the one seed.
I got a bold prediction.
January 1st, the Eagles are going to be in a tight race with the Cowboys, and we are going to be in a tight race probably with the Bucks. So no telling what could happen. That's going to be an emotionally charged game that's in Philadelphia.
Yeah. James, you got one final thought on CJGJ?
Yeah, slightly different take on it. Is this Dennis Allen's I'm the boss moment? Has he taken this to kind of lay his marker down and say, yeah, do you know what? This is my team. You disrespected me. You're gone.
I don't think so, but if so, I'm fucking stoked about it. He needed to do that, because I'm just like, we've heard rumors of some crazy stuff going on where Sean Payton in the media kind of seemed like he was this control freak. I've heard lots of crazy stories about some big time players in the Saints locker room acting crazy, and Sean Payton being like one of the main people to, you know, let them know that they could get away with anything and hold
the players.
Man, yes. So
I mean, look,
if Dennis Allen did that, I love it.
Yeah, if that is the case, yeah, definitely.
You could definitely look at. I mean, as much as look, Payton's the greatest coach in Saints history, no doubt. But the last few years, I just don't think he was in it as much as he should have been. And yeah, it sucks to lose him, but you know what?
Last year was actually our first year without Sean Payton as our head coach.
I mean, I think he quit. He quit on us.
I mean, we're getting back to hearing the stories about him trying to leave multiple times, and in 2019, him really, really, really trying to leave. And then now we find out that last year, even before he retired, he had another plan of where he was going. So there's
what's crazy is ever since he wanted to leave, the Saints have been the best they've been since like 2010.
We have the best regular season record in football since he wanted to leave.
You're right. I like it that he wanted to leave.
Well, I think the Nola no call is the one.
I think after that he was done.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm out.
Which is fucked up because you want to be out, then be out of the NFL.
Well, that game killed a lot. That game was fucking. We should have had a fucking.
What if Sean Payton actually knows something about the NFL and that they're not going to let small market teams win?
Well, the St. Louis Rams won last year, so that's not
St. Louis Rams.
Oh wait.
Oh, it took a move in LA.
So right? one last thing on CD. Do you think there was anything to the? I'm sure. Bad relationship between him and Michael Thomas. You think there's anything to
No.
I mean, look, Michael Thomas, he was playing great. He got a little tweak. We haven't seen him yet. I'm assuming he's going to be ready for week one. But do you think I don't think this has anything to do with him being traded. They also, I think they hated each other. 100% they hated each other.
Sure. And that, yeah, sure. I've got a bold prediction about that coming up.
Oh. I'm gonna say to both parts, I'm gonna say no specifically, not Michael Thomas, Jason, but I'm gonna say that he was not the popular, energetic, fun leader in the locker room that we might have as fans thought. Because why don't you go Google how many Saints players made comments specifically about CJGJ after he left? There was Cam Jordan, who's just nice to everybody, kind of kind of said something nice. Tyrann Mathieu, who I just can't imagine the two of them getting along, immediately was like, yeah, we'll miss him, but we're really excited about who we've got in the locker room. And then DeMario Davis, who's maybe the nicest guy in the league, would not say his name. He kept doing the Sean Payton, like saying the player. And then he just went into a general thing about, well, y'all don't understand what's like when players and families have to move. He just went into a general thing about the NFL and how people move.
It shows you the whole defense.
DeMario Davis, who is the leader of our team, didn't give a shit that CJGJ got. And he's the kind of person.
Which is why we're going to be a better team this year.
Did you see the Instagram video that he did? Or was it a live stream he did?
Yeah, he was like, oh yeah, Jabo Jameis is gonna give him an interception so he can
get it. Okay. I can hand it.
Okay, yeah, I can talk shit too.
You know, like that is gonna be a massive
game. We know
game.
His number. We know CD Deuce. He's all talk. He never backs it up on the. Oh wait, he does sometimes. But the only thing I'm concerned about is yes, the game that we play against him and him getting inside our players' heads.
Like that game might be for the one seed.
Yeah.
That's both right. The teams.
All right.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Next take. I'm interested in. Let's go back.
We still got takes.
The Saints players that are actually on the team. I want to know what your take. Who hasn't started? James, we'll go to you first on this one. Saints pass rush overall. What's your take on the Saints pass rush this year? What do you expect from it? You got a good secondary, which should help with the pass rush, and it's a kind of a symbiotic relationship. What do you expect though? Anything different or same old, which is not bad?
So I need Cam Jordan to get COVID and I need Marcus Davenport to stay fit. If those two things happen,
well, then we're done.
Well,
no, in all seriousness, so this is assuming health, right, throughout the whole season. Well, at the moment he's healthy and he's playing, right, Marcus Davenport. If Davenport is healthy and fit, then we could be talking team record in sacks for this year, because the secondary is going to be able to cover receivers longer than this defense has ever had before. You know, I mean, Cam Jordan was getting sacks like you wouldn't believe for the last half of last season. And Davenport had, 9.5 sacks in 11 games, I think, was his final total. If we can, you know, if we can keep health on the defensive line, it's actually quite scary what they might do to quarterbacks.
I'm worried about Peyton Turner. I hope
about his health or
no, about just him being a good player. Like, I hope that he's turns out great. Obviously, I don't want to not see him succeed, but
it's almost like every element of our pass rush and our D line has a if this then that scenario,
except for Cam Jordan.
If Cam Jordan's not double teamed, right?
No, if it's the if for Cam Jordan is if he gets COVID,
okay, but he's getting older. I mean, but if Davenport can stay healthy, if Peyton Turner works out,
Peyton Turner doesn't suck.
Right.
Yeah, I'm worried about Turner. Like, that's my worry on the D. Like, I like the other, I like the tackles, I like Onyemata. You know, Roach is going to miss a few games, but I like.
So if Davenport and Cam have, let's say, 25 sacks between them, right? It's not an unreasonable number between the two, or is that too high?
It's not unreasonable, but that's like,
it's not
unreasonable,
I have another bold prediction regarding Davenport.
But if Peyton Turner gets 5 sacks this year, we'd be happy, right?
Seven?
Seven. Yeah, maybe. He's got to get more than that. Five.
I need seven out of him.
But then
five of last year, his rookie year, he had played, but he's had a year and a half of mental
development. He needs more.
Passanio was rushing the passer okay at the start of last year before he got injured, wasn't he? He was on for good sack numbers. I mean, you know, David Onyemata, we've got a full season of him this year.
We have quality players, but we need the players that we spent first round capital on to produce. That's where it comes down. That's Davenport. If he's healthy, he's going to produce. It all comes down to Turner. I mean, dude, Turner, you're a first round pick year two. You have to produce seven sacks minimum.
I'm going to take a slightly different tact on this. Our secondary is potentially that good.
We did just lose a guy.
No, Yeah, but Roby steps in. I'm not sure the pass. I'm not sure the coverage gets any worse with Roby in the slot than CD in the slot. But you know, a lot of the sacks that are going to come this year are going to be coverage sacks rather than the defensive line winning. So do we need?
We still see where. You can't have Peyton Turner be a regular.
No, he has to. I agree.
And like you said, like if he plays slightly above average, if the coverage is as good as we think it's going to be, then yes, he should get. Like he should easily get, 10. Like you could get Davenport, Jordan, and Turner with possibly 10 if the secondary is as good as.
You've got Granderson as well. Granderson chips him a couple each year.
He will, and I also think we're missing too. That Tyrann Mathieu and Demario Davis are going to get some sacks.
Yeah,
it's going to be because of the talent of the defensive line, who the offensive line and the running back are going to be set on trying to pick up those guys. I mean, now again, those guys are smart about it. I mean, we need somebody, and again, it might be like a Justin Evans or something like that to replace what we're losing with CeeDee, because CeeDee was good at that sneaky sack. Marcus May, he has some sacks in his career too. So there's going to be a couple of those kind of sacks too coming in from players that we're not necessarily expecting.
With our secondary being good, we talk about that. We talk about our defensive line getting sacks. Is there any concern? Because I mean, in the past it's been very good, but is there any concern with our running, our being able to stop the run?
No.
Or do you see that as an issue at all, or no?
I just think our system, until our system fails, our system it normally is so a strength. Proven. I agree.
Well, but
we've changed out players. We all freaked out when Malcolm Brown left that it was over. Like he was the key to our run defense, and we were this number two run defense last year.
It's on Yamada.
Well, no, it's not just on Yamada, but a lot of it goes back to the linebacker. So yes, our secondary is going to be good. We're going to play a lot of secondary players. How is our linebacker play outside of Demario Davis? Like I think we all like Pete Werner. I know he's practicing. Is he healthy? Is he going to be ready? I'd like him, but he's pretty injury prone. And so it's him and Ellis. And who do you have at the second level to actually stop the run? If Werner doesn't play a lot, like let's say he's injured and he plays half a season. I mean, Ellis is more of a pass rusher, right? So who else do we have at the linebacker position to be able to play the run?
I think that we'll do a lot of the big safety sets. So that's where PJ Williams, who's playing a kind of hybrid safety linebacker, Marcus May is a good tackler. Tyrann Mathieu kind of I think we'll have a bunch of that kind of going around. And then we didn't really talk about it, but when talking about the kind of what we're doing with the defense, Tyrann Mathieu is going to play the nickel this year. He's not just going to sit back at safety. There's going to be certain people we're trying to get matchups against where we know that it makes more sense for Tyrann Mathieu to be in the slot and PJ Williams or Justin Evans to be back as a safety. So I think we're going to pick and choose those, and there's going to be some really goofy things where our starting lineup for defense could change over and over again, even if there's no injuries. I think there'll be some interesting packages we'll do like that.
Specifically
to the opponent.
You look at week one against the Falcons, right? And they've got one receiver
right now, and he's a tight end. One receiver is a tight end.
Exactly. So, it's going to be a very, very interesting it's going to be interesting to see how Dennis Allen lines up. But
I think that's a perfect. You put if Kyle Pitts is going to be in the slot and not move around and be a receiver, I think you stick Tyrann Mathieu on him all day long and it's like that's have fun with that. And I mean the way we would normally do with Lattimore and our receiver
size doesn't matter when it comes to Tyrann Mathieu.
Man,
obviously I've not really watched a huge amount of him since his LSU days, but he's really good. He's really, really, really good. And I can't wait to see what he does this year. It's going to be.
All right. I'm going to move us on. That was our What's Your Take segment, which lasted about an hour. That's one episode. All right. That's all the show we have for you right now. We're going to thank loyal listeners for downloading each week and telling all of your friends about the Dome Patrol podcast. Follow us on Facebook. Look for Dome Patrol Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Dome Patrol PCast and at Dome Patrol UK. And if you want to participate in game day chat, DM us on Twitter to get an invitation to the Dome Patrol Podcast Discord server. And of course, if you want to listen to us the old-fashioned way, go to Dome Patrol Podcast.
.com.
Say bye-bye, donkeys.
Bye-bye, Falcon donkeys. Fuck the Falcons. Good night.
Fuck the Falcons.
Good night, Who Dat Nation.